I decided for a couple of reasons tonight, but one of which will be real clear real quickly here, to reverse the regular order. Normally we do the Torah teaching first, and then later on I talk about what's going on in the world with the usual caveats and reminders and so forth. But this is kind of a special night, I guess, in several ways. For one, the story features, of course, the talking donkey, Balaam's ass, more popularly known. And, well, you've probably heard it. Some non-believers have suggested that Balaam's ass and the talking donkey somehow strains credulity, to which all I can say is, au contraire. We have talking horses' asses literally by the dozens, if not the hundreds, in Congress and in the mainstream media alone, so who are we kidding? And furthermore, unlike Balaam's ass, the talking horses' asses today lie. They lie through their teeth, whereas Balaam's ass told the truth. So there are some big differences as well. Now, the reason why I mention all of that, of course, is because I wanted to do the news first, simply to set the stage, because there is so much about this story that, it shows that the creator of the universe has a sense of humor. It shows, there's a whole lot of irony and humor and other things going on here, too. But honestly, if you look at the news, you have to ask the question, which is the more bizarre? I mentioned I couldn't think of, not Helter Skelter, oh, for crying out loud, the Kubrick movie. I was trying to think of the guy that it's... What's that? It was the guy that played the nut guy. It'll come to me. Somebody's probably online. Somebody can help me out here. I can picture it. It was a book that was made into a movie, too. And it was about a mass murderer who was, nuttier than a fruitcake. But anyway, that's just kind of a metaphor for our world at the time. Clockwork Orange. Thank you. A Clockwork Orange. There we go. Yes, that was the story. A Clockwork Orange. So, with that in mind, and the story tonight, of course, which is the Parsha is called Balak. Really, though, the major character is Bilaam. In English, you'll hear people call him Balaam, but it's Bilaam in the Hebrew. And I want to ask a question. Now, I'll look at the screen for the numbers. And just type, some single word that will give me a clue as to which one of these you're going to pick. But I'm going to lay out several stories, and I'll tell you up front, all of them are true. And furthermore, all of them literally came out today. Matter of fact, most of them came out since I finished the news shows that I get up by midday on Friday. So all of these are less than 24 hours old. And one of them, and only one of them, is from the Babylon Bee. You know, that's kind of like the Onion. It's a satire site. The others are allegedly true. And let's go with them in no particular order, see if this makes any sense to you. So the question is, which one of them is not true? Which one is the actual satire? First, and I won't give the sources on any of these because that would give it away. Colorado State University, opposite end of the state from right here, says you're no longer allowed to use the word America. And they don't even spell it right. Because it's not inclusive. And it therefore should be avoided. Along with other not politically correct words, you've heard some of them before, male and female, ladies and gentlemen, Mr., Ms., and Mrs. Ironically, Ms. was politically correct not long ago. You're not allowed to say straight, because it implies that LGBT, pedophilia, necrophilia, bestiality, etc. are not normal, and so forth. Okay, if I give too much more, it'll become obvious. So that's choice number one. Choice number two, the Miss World America, don't they know they didn't get the word from CSU, has stripped Miss Michigan of her title because she refused to wear a hijab at a campus event. And she also tweeted something about black-on-black crime, too, with statistics that are right from the FBI. So, Achtung, that's verboten. How about this one? Whole Foods, a.k.a. Whole Paycheck, maybe we have to call them Whole Fubar nowadays, has sponsored a drag queen storytime event. And, you got to wonder, is it going to feature Jeffrey Epstein in drag with a Bill Clinton mask on? How about this one? Some of these I apologize for, and it's not the onion. Trans activist has sued a Brazilian waxing business. Now, this one I have to explain a bit, and it's a little bit, it's really tacky, but that's what we're talking about anyway. Trans activist named Jessica Yaniv has sued business owners in British Columbia, all of which salons refuse to give it, her, he, a Brazilian wax. Now, the Brazilian wax basically involves waxing up somebody's pubic area and shaving the hairs off. All right? And, okay, this one I guess I've given away. This, folks, in spite of the fact you may want to pick it, is not the Onion or the Babylon Bee. This is a true story. I kid you not. And I'll read you the headline, and I will quit after I read the headline. Thankfully, you do not have to see the picture of this disgusting thing. Anyway, it says in the headline, trans activist sues Brazilian wax business after owner refused to shave her balls. Good grief. These are, okay, that's a real story. That's not the Babylon Bee. I almost started with that one just because I thought, you know, who's going to believe anything when stories like that are actually happening and people are getting sued for not doing obscenely disgusting stuff? How about this one? And, okay, let me just read it and you can pick it if you want. Hitlery has spoken at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference after receiving an award. And she trashed Trump as racist, racist, racist. And finally, last entry in the Which One is the Babylon Bee? Fact or fiction? NASA has announced an all-female remake, or at least maybe transgender female. Anyway, a remake of the staged moon landings. So as you may have heard, tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of July 20th, 1969. So, as a tribute to its 50th anniversary of the fake moon landing, NASA has announced a reboot of the staged event that fooled billions worldwide, this time, though, featuring an all-female crew. There's more details about it. But according to sources, the only change in the script this time around is that it has a more inclusive update to Armstrong's famous words when he stepped onto the lunar surface. The new line now reads, quote, "That's one small step for a woman. One giant leap for womankind, mankind, transgender kind, gender fluid kind, and other kind." Unquote. All right. There we go. Anybody, we got the lag here. Anybody want to hazard a guess which one of these is the Babylon Bee and which ones were all essentially true? Okay, yes, and okay, we got the local answer here too. Keep typing. But in any case, the last one, the one having to do with NASA, was the one from the Babylon Bee. Because, come on, who are we kidding? As obscene as it may be, if NASA did fake the moon landing, the last thing they're ever going to do, true to any government agency, is ever admit they were wrong or that they lied. We know that. So, obviously, that one's steps out because simply, the really nasty stuff never gets admitted to be wrong. Here we go. Here are some other quick stories, too, that you can kind of see why it is that I'm starting off this way. Compared to this stuff, folks, a talking donkey, Balaam's ass, is literally tame stuff. And furthermore, the creator of the universe had perfectly good reason for letting Balaam's ass speak to him, to save him. Whereas what we have are a whole bunch of talking horses' asses whose intent is to destroy you and kill you and literally curse you in a way that I guess you'd have to say does really fit with what Balak was asking as well. All right, speaking of which, earlier in the week we had this story. Man firebombs the ICE facility in Tacoma, Washington, threw Molotov cocktails, tried to light off a propane tank. He had a rifle, and he was shooting at folks, and he was eventually killed. It was suicide by cop. And rather than condemning him as, all the leftists would immediately demand that Trump would do whenever anybody who was even remotely accused of being a rightist, and they tried to do that, they tried to say this guy was a right-wing extremist. Nobody was buying it. Partly because none of the usual nutcases, the talking horses' asses, would actually come out and condemn the fellow. And if he had been a genuine right-wing conservative, well, you know they would have condemned him without hesitation. So that's the key there. Next story, Google exec says that InfoWars and Alex Jones, Akhtung, will soon be disappeared, unsearchable, down the memory hole, erased by the Ministry of Truth from YouTube. They're going to be completely eradicated, along with everybody else who doesn't toe the politically correct line. I got a piece that I almost didn't even do from Mike Adams, talking about they're doing the same thing with anybody that can actually simply read statistics about vaccines. And how dare you suggest that vaccines are not 110% utterly safe and totally effective, even if the statistics say they're not. How about this one? This one almost could have been in the Babylon Bee competition, but came out earlier in the week, so it's more than 24 hours old. And what was funny to me was I saw it on RT first, Russia Today, and sadly, Russia Today has a far better level of integrity than the WAPO, New York Times, CNN, MSNBC et al. And they admitted this was a joke, but it does have all kinds of, let's just say, implications. A farcical event having to do with Area 51. This is the top secret UFO testing ground out in the Nevada-California desert. And let's see, what was the name of this thing? Anyway, basically, we can move faster than their bullets was the punchline of this. A guy on to Facebook suggested that all kinds of people should go out to Area 51, and this is a top secret verboten area, deadly force authorized. You know, they don't have a wall around it. They just defend it like it was what? You know, an area that the military actually wants to defend as opposed to the southern border. So they've had over a million UFO fans already sign up saying they're going to come, and a better than 900,000 saying they're thinking about it. So if even a fraction of those come, they can break the aliens free from the secret desert facility, and it would be one of the largest civil disobedience events ever in the United States. Air Force spokeswoman, however, was not amused, and they said, we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area. They warned that, you know, the use of deadly force is authorized, and Akhtung, you know, you'd better not even try it. Now, what I think is funny was the following, right? And the irony here is it's too precious for words. We have an invasion across the southern border proceeding at warp speed. Real aliens, not the green kind with the slanty eyes or the lizard people or whatever, but real aliens that are probably every bit as foreign to the concept of we hold certain truths to be self-evident and acknowledge a creator and God-given rights, that one is proceeding at warp speed. And these are the only aliens in Area 51 that the military will not let you see. They're more than happy to bust the others around and let you see them. And furthermore, folks, imagine, just imagine, if the U.S. military took the border, which is actually what the purpose once upon a time of the military was to defend the United States against invasion. Imagine if they took that mission as seriously as they do protecting Americans from finding out what's really happening in the top secret alien facility. Good grief. All right. A big story of the week, of course, was Trump tweeting about the what I would refer to as the Jihad Squad, the four traitors in Congress, the four horsewomen of the apocalypse, the four horses you know what of the apocalypse, others have said. But in any case, this is Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, the occasional Cortex, and another woman who doesn't have quite the level of utter insanity. She's just an Indian, and she talks about bigotry and racism because she are one. And essentially, what Trump tweeted was basically, since you hate America so much and keep talking about wanting to turn it into the third world, you know what hole from whence you came, you could go back if you're not happy. He said following, quote, we will never be a socialist or communist country. If you're not happy here, you can leave. It's your choice alone. This is about love for America. Certain people hate our country, and at this point he didn't even name them, and he described them at some length. So, essentially, you'd have thought that they had struck somebody's sacred cow. Indeed, they had. He was called a racist for pointing out that, look at this way, folks. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were hung. No, they were electrocuted, if I'm remembering right. But anyway, they were tried and convicted of treason. And ultimately, they didn't have nearly the influence or the ability to do evil that these four traitors are in fact doing. And I wish Trump essentially hadn't pulled his punches so much and had come right out and said what needs to be done. For example, as this fellow did, David Steinberg, writing about the various 8 documented instances of perjury by Rashida, this is Ilhan Omar. If we still had a rule of law, she could face 40 years in prison or deportation. Among other things she committed was marriage fraud, maybe married her brother and then lied about it and so forth, all kinds of tax fraud. Just fraud, and why are we surprised? He didn't even name the big one, which is that she took an oath and lied through her teeth. All right, I'm going to skip through some of the other stuff. Mueller should be arrested, said Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, for conspiracy to overthrow the president. Good to see he's finally coming on board. And, we'll see how much of the other stinks there are. One last comment, I guess, on the border. Now, this was kind of interesting because it shows the level of insanity here. As you know, all an illegal alien has to do is get across the border by hook or by crook, claim asylum, and then they get to stay. They don't even have to show up for their hearings. And we got, by some estimates, 2 million more coming in this year alone. It's an invasion by any standards. And Trump did by putting a new rule in the Federal Register earlier this week was to say that they're going to end asylum protections according to a treaty that actually has the force of, back when we had a rule of law, a treaty that said, look, if they pass through another country that is a treaty signatory claiming asylum, well, they're supposed to claim asylum in the first country they pass through. So they're coming ashore in South America or Guatemala or Honduras or Mexico or wherever, then they're supposed to ask for asylum there. So what we're going to say is they're not eligible thereafter for asylum at the U.S. southern border. And, of course, you can guess that since he's merely the president, there'll be some third-rate judge in some little S-hole somewhere that will say, Achtung, no, I'm going to override the president of the United States. All right, that's an Iowa. Here's another one more story. Perfect storm for a Holocaust of vaccines is now here. I mentioned this in the category of dealing with the gulag and censorship and so forth. But what Mike Adams points out is, used to be you had science. It was called self-correcting. But there's no self-correction in science when we don't have science and we don't have the ability to dissent and even provide actual information, like via the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting site from the government. If you so much as quote the statistics reported on the government's own website, you'll be deplatformed and banned from two Facebook, Gulag, YouTube, Vimeo, Twitter, and others. So we're setting people up for all kinds of nasty, evil stuff. There's a lot more, but I guess that pretty well summarizes the quick overview. Again, the very idea that a talking donkey would be seen as not credible by anybody kind of boggles the mind. And as we go through the Torah portion here in a few minutes, we'll mention some of the other, parallels and anti-parallels with what's going on in this week's Torah portion. Okay, let me ask it this way. Got any questions or comments before we talk about the rest of the Torah portion? I do think it's ironic. I see the comment about a cover-up and Epstein and all that kind of jazz. Folks, we've known about Epstein for literally a decade, and so much of the evil that was done here. For crying out loud, we had a rapist in the White House for years, and the media completely ignored that, in spite of the fact that there were lots more credible people coming forward and indicating sexual abuse and rape and you name it than anything that Mueller spent 2 years on the witch hunt trying to come up with. And now we have open pedophilia, and for crying out loud, you've got a whole paycheck, a whole FUBAR coming out and saying, you know, it's not good enough that we have Epstein literally running the intelligence services, it looks like, and he owns most of the executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch, because they don't dare touch the guy, at least they didn't for a long time. Who knows whether they will now or not. And open pedophilia is next. And I have suggested that if you're looking at the things that the Bible says carry a death penalty, that means bestiality is probably next. And I wish I was kidding, but we're not. And it's that bad. Okay, so I don't think we have any other comments. So let's have one more song, and we'll do the Torah song at this point, and then we'll do the last regular song later. But let's do Melech Ozer to introduce the Torah portion this evening. And I see that one more quick comment before that. I see the comment from Keeps about all of it just makes me sick. And I understand, and it does. And that was, I think, part of the reason why I did that sequence of things that you just go, come on, this is beyond the pale. You couldn't even have made bad jokes. You know, the satire sites. We're talking about stuff that is tame compared to any of the things that were showing up in the press in just the last 24 hours. That's how far gone things really are. So remember what we're told in Ezekiel 8 and 9, sigh and cry for the abominations. Do not keep silent. We'll come back to that with the Torah portion too. It's in there as well. Okay, let's do Melech Ozer. Melech Ozer u'mashiach u'magein. Melech Ozer u'mashiach u'magein. Baruch atah Yahuwah, Baruch atah Yahuwah. Magen Avraham. Baruch atah Yahuwah, Baruch atah Yahuwah. Magen Abraham, King Redeemer, Savior and Shield, King Redeemer, Savior and Shield, blessed is Yahuwah, blessed is Yahuwah, Shield of Abraham, blessed is Yahuwah, blessed is Yahuwah, Shield of Abraham. Okay, well, we're a bit late at saying it, but I'll say it nevertheless. And that, of course, is turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. And it's actually in chapter 22 at this point of the book of Numbers, or Bemidbar, in this case, in the wilderness. And it picks up with, after the children of Israel journeyed, they pitched in the plains not too far from a place called Moab. Now, remember, beyond the Jordan at Jericho, remember where Moab is and what Moab is. Moab literally is a place where dwelt essentially the sons of the sons of the sons of Lot. And if you remember, this is a land that its inhabitants largely came into existence and get their name from the process of incest. And one of those guys is this fellow who begins the portion. And it says, and Balak, the son of Zippor. Zippor, we know that name. Zippor, Zipporah is Moshe's wife. That would be bird. So the son of Zippor saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. So Balak is upset at what he sees because the Israelites are coming. Moab was sore afraid of the people because there were so many. If that sounds familiar, it sounds a bit like the first part of Exodus, chapter 1. Pharaoh was afraid for similar reasons. And Moab was overcome with dread because of the children of Israel. And Moab, now notice it's using interchangeably here, Balak, son of Zippor, and Moab. And it's not told us yet, but it's going to in just a second. Balak was the king of Moab at that time. So that's how come he gets to speak for Moab. He was overcome, though, with dread because of the children of Israel. And Moab said unto the elders of Midian, now, will this multitude lick up all that's round about us just like an ox licks up the grass of the field? And yes, he was king of Moab at that time. He sent messengers, therefore, to the fellow I have jokingly referred to in years past, and I guess I will again, as the chief televangelist of the time. He's kind of like the, you name it. Who's the mega preacher down in Texas? Oh, I can never think of these guys' names, and probably just as well that I don't. But anyway, you know, the ones that essentially, they talk a whole different talk, don't walk any walk. And they do, however, fly Gulfstreams and make a whole lot of money and have lots and lots of people hanging on their every word. It's just that their every word has very little to do with the word of Yah. Okay, so that kind of, you know, here's one of the many parallels in this story that has to do with where we're at and this guy, too, this fellow, Bilaam. He, of course, is essentially a pagan prophet. So, messengers come to him from Balak to call upon him. And they said, behold, look, there's this people coming up out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth, and they're going to abide against us. So, therefore, come on down, I pray you, and curse this people for me. Because they're too mighty for me, and I need to prevail. So, let's smite them, and that I might drive them out of the land, because I know, ponder this, and this sounds a little bit too like the modern televangelist, I know that those whom you bless are blessed, those whom you curse are cursed. Now, that, of course, was actually the promise that was made to Abraham, but that is what the televangelist today will tell you. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? Send $1,000 to this ministry, and yes, you can have your fondest desire. God will do what we say. And I wish I was exaggerating there, too, but sadly that does seem to be kind of the popular impression that is being left by a lot of these folks. And it looks like Balak has been reading Bilaam's press releases, too. All right, the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed. They had the rewards of divination in their hand. They came to Bilaam, and they spoke unto him the words of the king, Balak. And he said to them, okay, y'all stay here tonight. And I'll bring back word as Yahuwah may speak unto me. So the princes of Moab spent the night and abode with Balaam. And Elohim came to him, it says, and asked these questions. Now here's one of those great exchanges in Scripture where you know there's something tongue-in-cheek going on. And I'll tell you another thing as we go through this. There are some things in here that you do not get in the English. And if you see them in the original Hebrew, it makes not only a lot more sense, it kind of helps to explain things that almost seem contradictory in the English and give us a misunderstanding of the character of the Creator. All right, so he asks a rhetorical question, because you'd think he might know, right? He asked Adam, if you remember, a rhetorical question too, but he knew the answer already. Who are these? What are these? Well, you know, come on, what's going on here, Balaam? What men are these with you? Well, says Balaam, Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, and he said the following, behold, the folks that come up out of Egypt cover the face of the earth, now curse them for me, so that I can fight against them and drive them out. And Elohim responds to Balaam, and he says the following, the words in red here. Now let me read them in English, and then we'll talk about the Hebrew for just a second. Thou shalt not go with them. Don't go with them. Nor shall you curse the people, for they are blessed. Okay, sounds pretty straightforward. Don't go with them, and you're not to curse them either, because they are already blessed. Now, what's interesting in here, in the Hebrew, it says, lo, begins the sentence. Well, that's the first, that's the word that means no. So, lo, and then we get another word in this sentence that says, imahem. Imahem. Basically, this is the go with them, and there is a root in there that is associated with the people, am. So essentially, what this is saying in the Hebrew, the root word here is saying, you're not to be one with them as a people. Huh? Okay. In other words, don't go with them doesn't mean just physically, it means in purpose, in goal. Do not join yourself to go with them where they're headed, spiritually, physically, economically, you name it. This is a more inclusive word, and it has that root in it that has to do with of a people, being of one people with them. So that's the larger picture here. Okay, then Balaam rose early in the morning. He said to the princes of Balak, go on back into your land, because Yahuwah refuses to give me leave to go with you. Which is, I guess you'd say, it's a partial truth, at least. It's mostly the truth. He was a little bit more blunt than that, but okay, he's soft-pedaling it. The princes of Moab, they got up, they went back to the king, to Balak, and they said, Bilaam refuses to come with us. Well, that wasn't good enough for old Balak, so he sent more princes, not only more, but more honorable, higher ranking than the first ones. They go back. And they go to Bilaam, and they said, look, here is what Balak, son of Zippor, says now. Let nothing, I pray you, hinder you from coming unto me. I'm going to promote unto you great honor. I'm going to give you a whole lot of good stuff, dude. And whatever you say unto me, I will do. So come, therefore, I pray you, and curse this people for me. So Balaam answered, and it does a little bit sound like he's dickering, doesn't it? He says, look, if you were to give me this whole house full of silver and gold, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I cannot go beyond the word of Yahuwah, my Elohim, to do anything small or great. Now, therefore, hang around. Don't go rushing off right away. Tarry tonight so that I can go back and ask one more time and just make sure I heard him right the first time. See if Yahuwah will speak unto me some more. So why is he asking again? My dad used to say, you know, you already know the answer. Why are you asking again? Well, I'm hoping the answer might have changed. I hope maybe I can wear you down, right? Balaam was told when Elohim came to him that night, look, if the men are come to call you, Im, rise up and go with them. But only the word which I speak unto you, that you shall do. Now, did you catch it in there? Says, if the men come to call on you, then rise up and go with them. Is that the same word as before? Go with? He just told them, don't go with them. Now he's telling them, go with them. But wait, in the Hebrew, imahem was the word first time. Don't be of a people with them. Don't have a solidarity of purpose with them. This time, it says, itam. Itam. Which basically is also translated as with them, but in the Hebrew there's a different meaning. Okay, if you get on a bus, you're with people. If you go to a stand in a crowd, you're with people. But you may or may not be of a common purpose with them. You might just happen to be on the same bus. You look at America today and see a whole lot of people that are happen to be in the same state or in the same vicinity, but they're, for crying out loud, not even remotely of a common purpose. Matter of fact, there is a deliberate attempt to destroy any common purpose and override it with a whole different common purpose. So this is a very big distinction that is now being offered to Balaam, and it essentially amounts to, look, since you seem determined anyway, if they come to you, then you may physically accompany them. But understand this, only the word which I speak to you, that is what you shall do. So it says, Balaam rose up in the morning, he saddled his ass, and he went with the princes of Moab. Wait a minute. What? Does it say that the men called on him? No, he got up, saddled his own ass, and went with them is the implication here. Sounds like he wasn't actually following through with the permission that he was given even so far. And maybe that explains the next verse, because it says Elohim's anger was kindled because he went. And the Malach, the messenger of Yahuwah, placed himself in the way literally as Le Satan. The word means adversary. Satan. Put himself in the way. And here's Balaam riding on his ass and two servants with him at his side. Now, the ass, it says, now, by the way, folks, in Old English, there is a specific understanding of the word ass. It has to do with it means a female donkey. So a male donkey is not an ass. A female donkey is an ass. So he is riding on a female donkey, his two servants with him. And it says, the ass saw the angel, the Malach, the messenger of Yahuwah, standing in the way, had a sword drawn in his hand. And this was a good ass. This ass turned out of the way and went aside into the field. And Balaam, being the ignorant fool that he is, kind of blind, you'd think for a prophet he'd have had better eyes to see, right? That's part of the divine humor here. He smote the ass and turned her back on course, you know, right back into death's door. Now, this time the Malach then stood in a hollow way between the vineyards, a fence on one side and a fence on the other side. So now we've got walls on both sides, fairly narrow path, but a little bit of room. The ass sees the Malach of Yahuwah, the adversary there, and she this time smashes against the wall to stay clear of this thing and crushes Balaam's foot against the wall, and he whacks on her some more. And the angel of Yahuwah went further this third time. Now he stands in a narrow place where there's simply no way around, either to the right hand or to the left. And this time the ass still sees the angel of Yahuwah, and she literally drops down on all fours, lays down under Balaam, and he was some kind of PO'd. His anger was kindled, and he smote the ass with his staff. Okay, so here's this poor ass basically doing all she can to save this poor sluggard's life. Probably her own too, but we'll find out about that in a second. And at this point, Yahuwah decides he's had enough, and he opens the mouth of the ass, and she now speaks unto Balaam, the wonderful, high-priced, fully capable prophet of his time, right? The televangelist of the era. And she asks him a question, pretty good question at that. What have I done to you that you've now smitten me these three times? And Balaam said to his ass, because you have mocked me. He sounds kind of like the Jihad Squad. You have mocked me, and I would, had I a sword in my hand, I'd have killed you with it by now. Well, says the ass unto Balaam, this is, you know, for an ass that's been hit three times and just saved his life, she is eminently reasonable. You got to give it to the ass here, speaking to the real ass. Am I not your ass upon whom you've ridden all your life long up until this very day? Have I ever done anything like this before? Well, he says, no, not really. Well, then Yahuwah opens the eyes of Balaam. And finally, the brilliant prophet sees the angel of Yahuwah standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. And now he bows his head and falls on his face. Now, I notice in the telling here, there's no place where it says, Balaam finally gets up and says, you know, my beloved ass, I'm really sorry I've been whacking on you. You saved my life. Would you accept my sincere apologies? No, he doesn't do that. Makes me think he's probably fit for a government job, too. Yahuwah then says to him, look, why have you therefore smitten this ass three times? Behold, I have come forth as an adversary, a Satan against you, because your way is contrary to me. You are, in other words, an adversary to me. Now the ass, she saw me. She turned aside before me these three times, and unless she had turned aside like she did, by now I would have slain your ass. He didn't say it that way, but I will. And saved her alive. She'd have survived. You wouldn't have. Now, Balaam then says to the angel of Yahuwah, I have sinned, for I didn't know that it was you that stood in the way against me. Now, therefore, if it displeases you, I'll head on back. And the angel of Yahuwah says to Balaam, go with the men. There's that word again. No, it's not to be of common purpose with them. It's the other one. But listen carefully. Are you listening to me yet? You can almost see it, right? Only the word that I shall speak to you, that you shall speak. So, Balaam went with the princes of Balakim. And when Balak heard that Balaam had finally come, he went out to him. He met him at a place called Ir Moab on the border of the Arnon, uttermost part of the border. And Balak says to the televangelist Balaam, didn't I earnestly send unto you to call you? Why didn't you come to me? Aren't I able to promote you indeed to great honor? He sounds like he's one of the head of the clergy response team or something. Balaam then responds to the king, says, look, I have come to you. Have I now any power at all to speak anything? The word that Elohim puts in my mouth, that is what I shall speak. Finally, it sounds like the guy got the message. So Balaam went with Balak. They came to a place called Kiriat Huzot. And there Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep. He went to Balaam and to the princes that were with him. And it came to pass in the morning that Balak took Balaam, brought him up to Bamot Baal. And there he saw the uttermost part of the people. In other words, the encampment of the assembled multitudes, the mixed multitudes below. Remember, folks, 2.5, maybe 3 million people encamped. Balaam said to Balak, build me here 7 altars, and prepare me 7 bulls and 7 rams. So Balak did, as Balaam had spoken, and the pair of them offered on every altar a bull and a ram. And Balaam now says to the king, stand by your burnt offering, and I'll go Peradventure Yahuwah will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you. So he went up to a place of height, and Elohim met with him there, and he said to him the following, words in red. I have prepared the seven altars, and I have offered up a bull and ram on every one of them. And Yahuwah put a word in Bilaam's mouth, just like he did the donkey. Isn't that amazing? And he said, return unto Balak, and this is what you're going to tell him. So he returned to him. He stood by his burnt offering all along with the princes of Moab. He took up his parable, and he said the following. From Aram, Balak brings me, the king of Moab from the mountains of the east. Come, curse me, Yaakov, and come, execrate Israel. Execrate. Now that's the first time that word appears in the Hebrew Torah here. That word is zoamah, execrate. Really, really tear them a new one, basically. It has kind of a nasty ring even in the English, doesn't it? But, he says, how shall I curse whom Elohim has not cursed? And how shall I execrate whom Yahuwah has not execrated? For from the top of the rocks I see him, from the hills I behold him. Lo, it is a people that shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. Now, I want to pause there because the prophecy goes on for a second, but of the things that are recorded in the Scripture that the Midrash kind of tends to focus on, this is probably number two, the second most famous. We'll get to the most famous as we get closer to the end of the story here in a minute, and you may already know where it is, but we'll wait on that one. But this one is maybe a little bit more enigmatic. He's talking about the mixed multitude. Now, you read the Hebrew Midrash, or at least the Jewish Midrash, and they'll say, oh, the Jewish people. Remember, these are not the Jewish people, folks. This is all of Israel, greater Israel, the mixed multitude. 12 plus one tribes, and a lot more than just Judah, or a lot more than those that would later just call themselves Jews. This is all of them. Kol Ha'edah. And it says, this is a people that shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. And what does that mean? And as you might suspect, and we'll probably talk more about this tomorrow, there is a whole lot of speculation on exactly what that is. But as I was going through the news tonight, this is kind of also one of those things that I think I'll point out and say, hey, when you go through this Parsha, Balak, and the story of Bilaam, and you read this line, and you look at all the nutcases in the news, and remember what Isaiah said about, I will choose their delusions because they chose that in which I do not delight. And I can't help but think, well, we got delusions upon delusions. Insanity. I guess it's good, right, that we shall dwell alone in that sense and shall not be reckoned among the nutcase, I put that word in there, nations. So maybe that would be my additional take on one way, at least, to look at this. Given the insanity that's coming here, and of course the continuing come out of her my people understanding, it's good that we not be reckoned among the nations. Who has counted the dust of Yaakov or numbered the stock of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let mine end be like his. Say, what? That doesn't sound like execration now, does it? Balak then says to Bilaam, what have you done to me? For crying out loud, I told you, and I brought you here so you could curse my enemies. And behold, what have you done? You have blessed them altogether. Well, says Bilaam, look, didn't I tell you? Must I not take heed to speak that which Yahuwah puts in my mouth? He's probably picturing that Malak with the sword at this point. Balak then says to him, all right, come on, I pray you, with me. Let's go hither to another place from when you can see them. And you'll see just the utmost part of them, and not see all of them, and you can curse them from there. In other words, maybe if I take you to a place where you just see a little bit of them, it won't be quite so overwhelming, and you can curse them there. So he took him into the field of Zophim, top of Pisgah, and one more time, they built seven altars and a bull and a ram on every one of them. Stand here, says Bilaam to Balak, by the burnt offering, while I go towards meeting over yonder. And Yahuwah meets with Bilaam, puts a word in his mouth, and says, return to Balak, and here is what you shall say. He came to him. There he was, standing by that burnt offering. princes of Moab with him, and Balak spoke to him, "What has Yahuwah told you?" He took up his parable and said, "Arise, Balak, and hear. Give ear to me, you son of Zippor. Elohim is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. When he said, will he not do it? Or when he has spoken, will he not make it good? Behold, I am bidden to bless, and when he has blessed, I can't call it back. None hath beheld iniquity in Yaakov, neither has one seen perverseness in Israel. Yahuwah his Elohim is with him, and the shouting for the king is among them. Elohim who brought them forth out of Egypt is for them like the lofty horns of the wild ox. There is no enchantment with Yaakov." Think about that in contrast to what we're seeing here with these two guys. "Nor is there any divination with Israel. Now it said of Yaakov and of Israel, what hath God wrought?" Famous line quoted later by Samuel F.B. Morse, first words sent by telegraph, if you remember. "Behold, a people that rises up as a lioness, and as a lion he lifts himself up. He'll not lie down until he eats of the prey and drinks the blood of the slain." Now, Balak, at this point, maybe he's had enough too. He says to Balaam, "Neither curse them at all nor bless them at all." What am I paying for here? I think is kind of another way to read that. But Balaam answered and he said to Balak, "Didn't I tell you again all that Yahuwah speaks, that I must do?" "Well," says Balak to Balaam, "come on now. I'm going to take you to yet another place, peradventure. It'll please Elohim that you might curse them from me from there." Now, at this point, as I read this, I'll admit, I do not like them, Sam, I am. Well, you can, I will not curse them in a box. I will not curse them with a fox. If I try to find another place, will you curse them from there? It does sound like Balak is kind of the quintessential, what's the word, model, I guess is what I'm looking for the Dr. Seuss stuff that's coming many centuries later. So let's find another place. Can you curse them from there? So Balak this time takes Balaam to the top of Peor, Baal Peor, remember? And he looks down upon the desert. This is the home of Baal worship. And where better to curse them from, right? Pagan central. Balaam says to Balak, "Build me 7 more altars, give me 7 more bulls and rams." Balak did, as Balaam said, they offered up one of each, on every altar. And when Balaam saw that it pleased Yahuwah to bless Israel, he didn't go, as he did at the other times, to meet with enchantments, but instead he set his face toward the wilderness. And here Balaam lifts up his eyes, and he saw Israel dwelling tribe by tribe. Now we've already talked about that in the Torah portions, how they're laid out by the tribes with their standards, with their banners. And a spirit of Elohim, it says, came upon him. And he took up his parable and he said, "This, the saying of Balaam, son of Beor, the saying of the man whose eye is opened." First time his eye is opened, he saw the angel. "The saying of him who hears the words of Elohim, who sees the visions of the Almighty, fallen down, yet with opened eyes." Here we go. Here is the most famous line in the entire section. "How goodly are thy tents, O Yaakov, thy dwellings, O Israel." Now, I'll make one more observation at this point. I've mentioned before there are a lot of places in Scripture, and there are several in this Torah portion, where we see references to both Jacob and Israel. Same guy. Ironically, at least in concept, it's the same people. And yet, if it was, why would this prophetic utterance keep mentioning both of them? And furthermore, the goal here, at least according to Balak, is to curse these people. And if we've followed the story up until this point, I have to mention, they've done a fairly decent job of trying to curse themselves, right? What with the whining and with the unfortunate incident with the golden calf, with the first recorded vote in history that cost them their lives in the wilderness, and so forth and so on. It's not like we haven't seen these people make all kinds of mistakes, and yet, in spite of all that, the Creator of the universe is faithful here. He is preventing this cursing from happening, and he indeed is going to bless them. But it is fascinating, given that I've suggested that when we see Jacob and Israel both referenced, It's almost like there's a duality, a double-mindedness in this people, Ha'am. Are they Jacob? Are they of the fallen human nature side? Or are they of the more spiritually inclined, obedient, looking forward as Israel kind? And here, the blessing is for both. So I think that's the key to remember. How goodly are thy tents, O Yaakov, thy dwellings, O Israel. Tents on the one hand, dwellings on the other. Tents are a physical place to live. Dwelling seems to have a kind of a broader connotation, doesn't it, for Israel. As valleys stretched out, as gardens by the riverside, as aloes planted of Yahuwah, as cedars beside the waters, water shall flow from his branches, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. Elohim, who brought him forth out of Egypt, is for him like the lofty horns of the wild ox. He shall eat up the nations that are his adversaries, and shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them through with arrows. You know what, Balak? Doesn't sound like you want to go up against these folks. He crouched, he lay down as a lioness. Who shall rouse him up? Blessed be everyone that blesses you, and cursed be everyone that curses you. So, this is not only a repetition of the prophecy, as it should be, that was given to Abraham and is now being repeated. It is also a direct refutation of the bogus stuff that Balak started out by telling Bilaam he'd heard about him. All right, end of the prophecy, but doesn't sound like Balak is liking this at all. His anger was kindled, it says, against Bilaam, and he smote his hands together, and Balak said to Bilaam, "Look, I called you to curse mine enemies, and behold, now you have blessed them all together no less than three times. Now, therefore, flee to your place. Get out of my sight, basically. I had thought to promote you to great honor, but you blew it. And lo, well, actually, no, he says it's Yahuwah that blew it for you. He has kept you back from your honor." Now, here I pause. I just have a single note in my margins. Irony, right? Ponder the irony of this. This guy is, he's nothing but a televangelist, pagan preacher, and yet here he is in fact central to a story that is recorded for all time in the Torah. As it turns out, he could do better than he is going to do. At least at this point, he's coming off looking fairly good. And this king says, "Oh, it's Yahuwah that kept you back from honor." There's more irony there, and in more ways than meets the eye. All right, so Balaam says to Balak, "Didn't I tell you? I spoke to your messengers too, the ones you sent to me, and I told them the following. Whether you would give me a whole house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of Yahuwah to do either good or bad out of my own mind. What Yahuwah speaks, that is in fact what I am going to speak. So behold, now I go to my people, and I will announce to you what this people should do to your people in the end of days." As if it wasn't, hey, you're not paying for this, so listen up, right? And he took up his parable and he said, "The saying of Bilaam, son of Beor, and the saying of the man whose eye is opened, the saying of him who hears the words of Elohim and knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, fallen down yet with opened eyes." Almost exactly word for word what he said before. "See him, I see him, yep, but not now. I behold him, but not nigh, not right at hand. There shall step forth a star out of Yaakov, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite through the corners of Moab, and break down all the sons of Set. Edom shall be a possession, Seir also, even his enemies shall be a possession, while Israel does valiantly. And out of Yaakov shall one have dominion, and shall destroy the remnant from the city." And he looked out on Amalek, and he took up his parable, and he said, "Amalek was the first of the nations, but his end shall come to destruction." And then he looked on the Kenite, he took up his parable, and he said, "Though firm be thy dwelling place, and though thy nest be set in the rock, nevertheless, Cain shall be wasted." How long? "Asher shall carry you away captive." And then he took up his parable, and he said, "Alas, who shall live after Elohim has appointed him? But ships shall come from the coast of Kittim, and they shall afflict Asher, and shall afflict Eber, and he also shall come to destruction. So, having basically dropped the bomb, Bilaam rose up, he went, he returned to his place, and Balak, too, went on his way. Now, at this point, you say, well, that sounds like the end of the story, right? Not so much. We're going to find out in about six chapters or so, Numbers 31, Paul Harvey would have called the rest of the story. And there is a certain irony here, too. Since it's going to be a couple weeks, and we've read it all before anyway, at the risk of tipping our hands, I will suggest to you that there's a Clintonian way to go around this. If you can't curse them, and I can't curse them, we can still figure out a way to get them to curse themselves. And to my mind, folks, that is the great irony of what we're seeing happening today. There is a people that seem determined to say, you know, whatever blessings God has, we spit on them. We've got our own talking horses' asses, and we are going to do everything we possibly can. And by the way, there's a lot more overlap here than most Americans would want to admit, because the way that Balak and Bilaam managed to get Israel to curse themselves was with sexual proclivities and other kinds of things that I guess I'd have to say, honestly, they're kind of tame compared to what America with a K and the rest of the world is doing today. But they certainly have a similar, goal and method all along the way. All right, now the next chapter, although we don't yet have it explained to us exactly what happens. Let me say that again. While it's not yet explained to us exactly how what happens, we are told what did happen. Okay? It says this, Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit harlotry with who? The daughters of Moab. How'd they do that? Oh, it's almost like there was a plan at foot here that we're not going to hear about till later, and that I've already alluded to. They called the people unto sacrifices of their gods. Come on down, worship these other gods. People ate, they bowed down to their gods, and Israel joined himself unto the Baal of Peor, Lord of Peor, the place where we had that final vision. And the anger of Yahuwah was kindled, what? Against Israel. There's more to this, but at this point, they have succeeded in doing what he was trying not to allow Bilaam to do directly, which is to curse themselves. The Yahuwah then said to Moshe, take all the chiefs of the people, hang them up, hang them high, before Yahuwah in the face of the sun, that the fierce anger of Yahuwah may turn away from Israel. Now, this fierce anger, af is the word here in Hebrew. It's kind of interesting. It's af Yahuwah, the fierce anger of Yahuwah, af Yahuwah. And the etymology of that word is af. It literally has to do with the flaring of the nose. If you say it, I guess, viciously enough, you can make it happen. Off, off, you know, like the ox in the old cartoons, right, that the little smoke comes out. That's exactly the picture we have here. The fierce anger of Yahuwah, the flaring nostrils may turn away from Israel. Now, Moshe at this point says to the Shoftim, the judges of Israel, slay you, every one of these men that have joined themselves unto Baal Peor. Death penalty for this. Behold, one of the children of Israel came up, and he brought unto his brethren a Midianite-ish woman in the sight of Moshe, and in the sight of Kol Edah, all of the congregation of the children of Israel, while they're weeping right there at the door of the tent of meeting. So, if I was to look and say, here's yet another parallel in this Torah portion that ought to absolutely leap off the page at us, this is a metaphor that I've used so many times of late. Okay, it's not enough that people call evil good and good evil. It's not enough that we have these the jihad squad in Congress literally saying we hate everything, we have no intent of honoring our oaths, we are going to commit open treason, we're going to be absolute disgusting bigots, and we're going to accuse other people of being the bigots that we are. It's very Hitlerian, folks. It's exactly right out of Mein Kampf. You do something, and then you blame your enemies for doing exactly what you're doing, even though they're not. What are we seeing? They're doubling down. They get caught, they double down. They get caught, for example, with the Epstein Lolita Express. What happens? Well, we get Gulag and Two Facebook to expunge the references. We get the connections, and the people that are truly the most guilty walk free. And now what do we got? We've got Whole Paycheck, Whole Foods, Holy Foobard, saying, oh, we're going to take some of this abomination and we're going to celebrate it. Drag queen story time. And like I mentioned, all of those stories that sound like something out of The Onion. Stuff that you just go, this is unbelievable. It's doubling down. It's literally saying, okay, we don't care if your nostrils are flaring, God of the Bible. We're going to take whatever you say not to do, and we're going to do it, and we're going to rub their faces in it. We're going to rub your faces in it. Do your worst. And that is precisely what is happening here. It is exactly what's being set up. We've just seen the chiefs of the people literally hang them high so that the anger of Yahuwah, the fierce anger, may turn away. Slay them all, those men who've joined themselves to Baal Peor. So what do? Double down. One of the children of Israel comes up, brought unto his brethren a whore, a Midianitish woman, right in the sight of Moshe. It tells us this explicitly, and in the sight of not just some, but all of the congregation. Right there before God and everybody. In other words, we're going to do the dirty deed. Ha ha, what are you going to do about it? While they're still weeping at the door of the tent of meeting for the stuff that's been happening as a result of, what, this kind of thing. Now, Pinhas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest. So this is Aaron's grandson. He sees it. Now, you got to admit, Pinhas has more chutzpah, more cojones, than, let's just say the 99.999% of the population then or now. He rises up, he took a spear in his hand, and he went right in there to the chamber after the man of Israel, and he thrust the pair of them through right while they were in the midst of doing the pagan dirty deed. Thrust the women through her belly and the man right through the back. So the plague, it says, was stayed from the children of Israel. Now, what's fascinating, of course, is we're going to hear the rest of the story next time. And the portion ends right here. It's one of these cliffhangers. Pinhas is the next Torah portion. But for the most part, except for the reward and the discussion about the somewhat enigmatic thing that Pinhas has done here, the story is finished at this point. And we're going to get a little bit more detail about some of the names involved and so forth. But the key part is right here. A whole lot of nasty stuff is happening. Somehow or other, as we're going to find out, Balaam has given the keys to the kingdom to Balak. He's told him, look, you only want to get these people, get them to curse themselves. We can kind of already see what happened. They said, hey, get your women and get them all in there. And the women can probably entice these men of Israel. Nowadays, it would be the transgendered, transphobic, pedophilic, necrophilic, you name it. We got some perversions. We'll send them all down in the camp. There'll be some perverts down there that'll want to go for it. These people weren't quite that far gone. It actually took women to entice them. So that's what they did. They sent the women of Moab down and said, okay, you want a little bit more of this action? Come on here and let's do some Baal worship. And that'll help to cement the dirty deed. You can get more where this came from. And as a result, a whole lot of cursing going on. So when they double down and do it right there in front of the entire congregation, and Moshe Pinhas goes in, takes a, in the sight of all Israel, takes a spear and runs them both through. And it says the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And ready for this? The last line in the Torah portion this evening. And those that died by the plague were 24,000.